But if they would have put like the shake weight in there and that did like some electromagnetic static to just charge up your car while you were driving, think about it. You would have been getting everywhere.
How's it going?
Yeah. Seems like it's so long ago that we were just last talking, but it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, and it's not even 2020. It's just the way things are when you're in a pandemic.
Oddly enough, it does feel like it's been a little bit.
I know, and you and I were just, you know, playing a game, what, last night?
Yeah. What? Wait, was it last night?
I think so.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah. So I guess we will start with follow-up this week. Ryan, it looks like you've got something in here about GM.
Yeah, so we had talked a little bit about GM at CES and them kind of being one of the like only manufacturers of cars that came out with really anything at CES. So I wanted to follow up. There was actually some more developments that they came out with this past week around combustion engines. And so they are planning on completely going non-combustion engine in, well, they're calling them light-duty vehicles. So basically like cars, anything that's not an SUV or truck. They're going totally like electric or hydrogen. They didn't say exactly what the fuel source is going to be, but by 2035, worldwide, the light-duty vehicles will be non-combustion engine. So hydrogen, electric, like whatever that looks like. 2035 worldwide, 2030 actually in the U.S. though. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like these timelines are so long for stuff that they should have been already working on. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's a pretty big shift, though, if you think about it. Like, it's really cool to see that there's more emphasis on the electric side of the house, and people aren't fighting it tooth and nail because of the scarcity of fuel.
Right. Yeah, it's one of those things I feel like different U.S. manufacturers, like, they dabbled in things, right? Like, they... a few years ago, hydrogen and things like that for like some of their like more industrial applications, like forklifts and localized, you know, vehicles around like a shop or around some, you know, factory where they were doing different fuel sources. And now it's like, oh, okay, we're gonna start to do that with, you know, our everyday cars. And I don't know, it just feels like a lot of people have been behind, even like Tesla and other companies.
Well, here's what makes me mad about it is in 1996, GM made the EV1, which was like the first like mass produced electric car. They made 1,100 units of it, roughly. And there's a whole documentary called Who Killed the Electric Car about, I haven't watched it, but it's about this car and the fact that, you know, GE made an electric car at one point and then sat on it. So, I mean, we could be a lot farther than we are now if those investments had been made back then. And instead, now we're talking about, well, in 15 years, GM is going to have maybe most or half of their cars being all electric, or not all electric, but off of the combustion engine. So it's just disappointing.
Yeah. What's really frustrating for me is other companies have made it so that their goal by that same time frame is all of their vehicles. So like VW, for instance, I think it's 2030 or 2040, pretty close to like the same timeline where they're basically saying all of our cars will be electric. And then same with Volvo. They're basically saying it's going to be bare minimum hybrid by, you know, X time. So it's like everyone except a few of these American manufacturers, like, yeah, we're all in on this and we're going to have, you know, this aggressive goal across the board, not just like, yeah, we're going to have some models available. it's like a whole shift, you know?
Yeah, and I wonder if some of that's too just like, I mean, Tesla took the risk and they put a sports car out there first, right? They test the water, they kind of get it all out, and then they start working their way into a more consumer base that's more accessible, and it made a huge market. So now the rest of them are probably feeling more comfortable, I'm sure. Like, okay, now we can do this. There's a market. We're not going to get slaughtered for it.
Yeah, and I think with Tesla getting to that, like, sub $40,000, granted, there's a lot of features missing from the Model 3, but the fact that they can do it, I think, pushes other manufacturers to try, because people are, you know, now everyday people are going, hey, you know what, that's not so bad, and the range is pretty good at that, even at that level. So
yeah, what was the GM one in 96 run on double D batteries?
I mean, it may have been like, but the thing is, if they had invested at that time, you know, really, like, for the long haul, we could be a lot farther than we are now.
Yeah, I'd like to see some. I'm sure there was some backroom deals with oil companies and stuff. Had to be. That's, you know, those kinds of things get lobbied.
Yeah, it was a three-phase AC motor. The battery was a 16.5 to 18.7 kilowatt hour lead acid.
Oh, man.
And then later versions had 26.4 kilowatt nickel metal hydride. So, yeah, it was a big power wheel, but. You know, it could have been more. It was 100 and... No, wait a second. I don't know what BPH is. Or BHP. What's BHP?
Brake horsepower.
Is that like normal horsepower?
Yeah. Basically to the brake, that's what you're getting.
Oh, okay. It was 137.
137 horsepower?
Yeah, so I mean, that was a good car, right?
Yeah, I mean, for the size of it. It looks like a Saturn. Remember those?
Yeah, or like an old Miata.
Yeah.
It the lead acid version had a 55 mile range, and the nickel metal hydride had 105. So that was still pretty good, I mean, for back then.
Yeah, just the problem with those batteries, right, is the memory that builds up. And so if you don't let it fully drain, you know. So battery technology. But you're right. I think that's exactly. If they had taken at that point and said, let's do this, like, sure, it may not be financially the best thing now. You know, I think you're right. I think we would be a lot further.
But if they would have put, like, the shake weight in there and that did, like, some electromagnetic static to just charge up your car while you were driving, think about it. You would have been getting everywhere.
You just made a word up, electromagnetic static.
That's definitely an Adam original right there. You know, that does bring up a point, though.
Yeah. It's definitely going to be the pull quote at the beginning of this episode. You know, they just had the electromagnetic static.
Yeah. I mean, you're just jilly because you weren't thinking of the shake weight.
It's true.
Yeah, I am. What were you going to say, Ryan?
I was just going to say, I mean, there's probably something there to where you could take a shake weight and somehow power a car with a shake weight. Obviously a much larger shake weight.
Let's focus on the shake weight. I mean, that's really where this is all at. If we would have had the shake weight back in 96, just think about how much further we'd be right now.
I don't want to think of a timeline where the shake weight came sooner.
But I do think it's funny because, so, like, the cars, in all seriousness, the cars being back on the electric scheme, you start thinking about how you're going to power your house, like getting the hookups and stuff in your garage and things of that nature. It becomes more of a modern thing, not just a niche. And I think that's kind of interesting because I've been thinking about it because I know I get made fun of from some aspects, but I really like that Cybertruck. I wouldn't mind having the Cybertruck.
Hey, they're going to be able to hit, like, scale in next year, I think they said. They'll be able to get to their production numbers. So that could be a thing. The Cybertruck could actually happen. You know, more than a few people. Yeah, no, I think, especially with, you look at the way our government is leaning, right, with the new administration. And I think there's going to be a lot more incentives rolling out over the next few years at the very, at the very least, these next few years are going to start. I think we're going to start seeing people make some pretty good jumps.
Yeah, isn't Mustang coming out with an electric version too, I believe?
Yeah. Yeah. So like the Bronco, I think they're going to have an EV version too, that new Bronco, which looks sick.
Now, the Bronco is the one that's got the LED light across the whole front, right? Just from left to right.
The Bronco is their Jeep competitor.
Right.
I don't know if it has a thing across the whole front. I know it has like really cool.
It has round lights, right?
It's like they're like squared round, kind of, I think.
Squircle.
Like a squircle. That's right.
Oh, squircle, of course.
For sure. Yeah. So, yeah, that's kind of the follow-up I wanted to have this week. Just, you know, good to see that there's even more coming out from GM, and hopefully they get more aggressive with it. That would be nice to see.
Yeah. So what do we have with MTG Arena?
So every year, Wizards comes out with what they call the State of the Game. It's their basically version of State of the Union for Magic Arena. And if you're not familiar with it, Magic Arena is their newer game client. So you can play Magic online across Mac OS and Windows. So they came up with the State of the Arena 2021, and they, you know, they talked about the new set, Kaldheim. I think that's how you say it. And, you know, that's all well and good. I haven't got to play the new set yet, but the exciting thing for me was that they announced when their mobile clients are going to be available for, since its inception. How many years has it been out, Adam? Three? Couple years?
Well, considering what we just talked about before the show, yeah, it's kind of been like 3 or 4 years now.
Yeah, it's been a while. Maybe it's been about two. I don't know. Anyway, so they announced their plans for Android and iOS, and also support for tablet. But right now, starting on January 28th, 2021, they have early access for their Android client. Now, I'm not sure why they only have early access for the Android client and not the iOS client, because they could use TestFlight to distribute the like a beta for the iOS client. But right now, Android early access is out. And then in the future, well, currently they have iOS in development. Then after that, they're going to have tablet support. So it sounds like they're going to have mobile phone support first and not tablet device sizes. And then after both of those are out, they're supposed to have like an Android actual like MVP release. So I don't know why they're doing the Android early access so soon, if it's going to be one of the last things out the door. But yeah.
So full disclaimer for anyone who's listening, doesn't know what the hell Magic Arena or Magic the Gathering is. Basically, it's a card game that you play with a bunch of dorks like us, where we get together and we magic missile each other and stuff and create monsters. But on the flip side of that, yeah, I didn't see any of the, when I looked on my Android device in the Google Play Store, I didn't find anything for the early access or anything I could download for it yet.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't had a chance to look. I haven't even seen if maybe there was an issue with it, you know, coming out today or not. But we'll take a look, and then I'm sure we'll have some follow-up next week about it.
So I have a question about all of this in general. So I've dabbled in Magic the Gathering. You know, I've played with you guys before. And I played long, long time ago when I was in grade school, you know, kind of thing. Do you think, because whenever I see games taking like a digital transition, do you think that this will take off as like a primary mode for people playing? Or do you think this is like either way to get other new people into it, or like a travel way of actually like, you know, playing the game?
Yeah. So are you talking about Arena in general or the mobile client?
Yeah. Arena in general, and then like mobile client, obviously then expands the usability, right?
Right, yeah. No, I mean, for a lot of people, Arena is their main way that they play. Wizards has another client that is Windows only called Magic Online, and a lot of players, professional players, would play that client as well as collecting cards. I think for the hardcore, you know, fans, which Magic has a lot of hardcore fans, they still collect the physical cards and play in physical tournaments, you know, at their stores, at their local game stores, or at bigger tournaments. But it has increased, I think, Magic's realm of influence substantially since they came out with Arena, because it makes it so easy to learn how to play, and some of the skills in the game or abilities can be complicated in how you have to use them or track certain things, and so that game makes it really, really easy. If you've ever played Blizzard's Hearthstone, it's basically that easy to learn how to play. And it's really fun too.
So, like, full disclaimer too, Ryan is normally like the rule Nazi, and when it comes to like the card games, some of these things in a
I don't like the word Nazi, but yes, I am very I like to play by the rules, because that's how the game's intended to be played.
Yeah. So he gets real like sphincter tight on this one, but
let's say rule lawyer.
Okay, rule lawyer. All right, but some of the abilities and things like that in these cards can be kind of open to interpretation. Like, some of them don't have the greatest instructional on it. So yeah, the Arena thing is great because there's nothing to, oh, your card says this, so let me look that up.
Right.
Yeah, Adam's right. And speaking of looking it up, there are like many places on the internet where you can look up like the explanation of whatever the card text says. Wizards has Oracle, which is kind of like their main database. But one I think that's even better is Scryfall, and that has a lot of different use cases and interpretations of the rules. So, like, if you come up against two cards, there might have been a decision somewhere in some tournament that said, hey, when these two cards interact with each other, this was what actually should happen first. And it's not always clear on the text of the card. But, yeah. So, anyway. Those rules are all baked into the client, so you don't have to think about that interaction at that level all the time.
My only like beef with, so on my side of it with this, I'm one that prefers the paperback versus doing the digital. I wholeheartedly just enjoy the sitting around with everyone doing a tournament. It's just fun. But the only beef I have with it is, I do wish that every time you bought a booster pack and some of these other things, it always came with something to redeem inside of Arena, and that you always got that reward there too, because nothing sucks worse than building out your deck on physical paperback and not having the same inside of the Arena set to play with and enjoy.
Yeah, that's a major downside for the player of Arena. It's an upside for Wizards, because they get you both ways. But you know, people can easily spend a couple hundred bucks on a deck, like a competitive deck in,
right?
Yeah, a competitive deck. And when you play Arena, you have to buy gems or play all the time to grind to get, hopefully, to open packs to get the cards that you want. A cool thing about Magic Online, their older client, is there are bots that you can trade with. There's actually trading in that game. And so there are entire like marketplaces and stores where you can get your deck, and then you can trade with a bot, and they'll, like, for, you know, a couple bucks, you can get a competitive deck that would cost like $100.
That's cool. Yeah.
And so I did that a little bit with Magic Online, but the client is just bad. And I really wish that Arena would have went in that direction, but I think the amount of investment that they put into it is only because they've been able to from the profits that they made from it.
Yeah, and another good feature too with the online thing that I see that I think benefits for people that are new or just people that lack patience is when you do sit around with the card, you know, the physical cards, you can waste so much time in a game. Like a game could take forever, but when you play online, it's got the timers, you know, everyone, you can only work within these parameters. It shortens it up. It makes it sweeter. It keeps everyone kind of on pace. And that's another thing that is nice. Yes, you could probably set up a timer and, you know, go like that physically, but
yeah,
you see where I'm going with it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, the setup and everything is automated. And, you know, shuffling is easier. And if you have to search for a card, if the card text says, hey, search your deck for this card, you can just type it into a search field and it shows up instead of you flipping through 60 cards.
Yeah. Now, I could see this being something that, you know, someone like me who's, you know, like to play it casually, that this could be for a guy like me who doesn't have all the time in the world. When I do have leisure time, you know, it'd be nice to have another thing to go to. So this, yeah, I like this. It's cool.
You just have to be careful with anything that has all the collecting stuff. You can easily get lost.
Yep.
Well, speaking of maybe things that you could do in your spare time, you should play Phasmophobia with me and Adam.
Yeah, you guys were talking about this, and I looked it up. It looks fun, but yeah, you guys will just have to, you'll have to sell me on it. Yeah, make your pitch.
Ryan, drop a brief. Go.
Oh, no, that's all you, dude.
Okay, so basically, this game is, it's not exactly Ghostbusters. You're not going in there and actually attacking ghosts and trying to catch them. But it is definitely you're in there, you're poking around, you're messing with them, and you're trying to figure out what they are as a team. You know, there's four of you at max, and you have all the various tools that you see on, like, your Ghost Hunter shows and things like that. You got your EMF reader, your temperature gauges, et cetera, et cetera. And there's no attacking. All you can do is run.
Yeah.
And you can die.
Yeah, it's basically a ghost, like a History Channel Ghost Hunter simulator game.
Okay.
And that sounds corny on paper, but
yeah. So, yes and no. So, I knew a guy who actually did those shows. He was like, it's really funny. He was a
ghost.
No, well, he might have been. Sometimes I was like, are you real? No, it's this guy I worked with. He's my boss actually. Anyway, long story. But yeah, he did one of those shows one time, and like what he told me about, I was like, I didn't know you were into that stuff. That's cool. So that just an aside. But yeah, I don't know. I don't, because for me, ghostbusting is ghostbusting, you know, child of that movie, and
yeah,
and the many games that have come off of Ghostbusters. So what's the appeal to you guys playing this game?
It scares you.
Okay.
I mean, it is a psychological game. Like, you put your headphones on, you got your surrounding, you're supposed to talk in game. You talk to the ghosts.
Okay.
The ghosts are creepy. They do mess with you. Like, and you go in these big spaces or these houses and there's no music. It's just ambient.
Yeah. I think beyond the, like, just being like jump scares and like getting nervous, the way that a standard, like a typical match happens is when you get to a site, you're like in this like big truck and you've got all your equipment in there and stuff. And then there's a whiteboard, and the whiteboard will have tasks that you need to accomplish. I think it's four tasks, like identify the ghost, and then do one of these other three things. And then below, they'll have a little bit of text to tell you about the name of the ghost and maybe some more information that can help you. So it's a puzzle-solving game because you're trying to determine what this ghost is and then do the other objectives that you are assigned, and you get money for those objectives. So with that and the fact that like the ghosts are really creepy, the levels aren't procedurally generated, but where the ghosts are is unique every time you play. And so with both of those things, it really adds to the replay value. There's what, four players? And so you're all trying to work together, and it can be fun. When you accomplish the goals of the mission, you get money for it, and then you use that money to buy supplies, and you have to bring that supply to each level. So like everybody kind of chips in with their equipment, and sometimes if you don't have the equipment you need to finish a certain objective, you just don't get the money for it, for that objective. But yeah, that's kind of a match in the nutshell.
You get to mess with each other and stuff too. Like this jerk here was like slamming doors on me and stuff while I was in there. Because some of the ghosts...
So it's like throwing you off a little bit.
Yeah, and some of these ghosts have personalities. Like, well, I won't come around you unless it's just you by yourself or a whole group. And you can piss them off. And that, it really does, like, they start hunting you.
Okay.
Yeah, there's like an activity meter, and as the activity meter goes up, the ghost is more likely to hunt, aka like they shut the door to whatever building you're in, and then like hunt for somebody to kill. And if they kill somebody, then the hunt's over. So yeah.
Oh, so one person dies. It's it.
Not the match, just the one.
Well, no. The ghost's hunt is over. Like, we're still trying to figure things out, but pick you off one by one. And so what Adam is saying is one time the other day, we were walking into a house, and the door will just shut automatically if a hunt starts. And so I shut the door, and I was like, oh, no, it's happening, it's happening. And Adam's like, oh, God.
Yeah, like, he totally threw me. I was already on edge because it was already real quiet. I was by myself, and we had a ghost that was very active, like very, very active.
Did you shut the lights off in your room?
Really? No, turn it off on us. Like the ghost was shutting it off on us.
Oh no, I meant your physical room, like right where you're at right now.
Oh yeah, I was by myself in the basement playing, and this supports VR too, and that we're gonna dive into that. I think.
Okay, that's cool.
This week or something, but yeah.
Well, cool. Yeah, I mean, good sell. I would definitely try this.
You should.
Yeah, it's, what is it, early access on Steam?
Yeah,
I think
like $13 or something.
Yeah, it's pretty cheap, and I don't think it requires any kind of like powerful hardware. The graphics are fairly basic, but they're enough to, you know, sell the ambience.
All right, so let's Let's hear about a little entertainment outside of video games.
Speaking of things that scare the hell out of you, so have you guys seen this trailer? Well, I mean, I think you've seen it. I sent this around. It's the new Godzilla versus Kong movie that's coming out.
So Kong and Zilla scare you?
I'm not gonna say that I wouldn't be scared. If they came out of freaking came at me. When I was little, like the original Godzilla and stuff like that really freaked me out back in the day. I hadn't heard that this was getting made, and I just came upon, it was one of those stumbled upon trailer things. And I was like, actually, this looks really cool. And I have not, and I'll be completely honest, I have not seen a Godzilla or King Kong movie in so long. Like this whole new universe that they're creating, I have not seen. Like Skull Island, haven't seen it, and that's supposed to have been like, you know, part of this whole universe. But I tell you what, like this actually looks really fun. Like it seems like one of those movies where it's just action and just fun, two big old monsters just going at it, and that is, to me, that's just one of those movies you just sit down and, you know, have a good time watching. So that was interesting.
Yeah, like I really like these types of movies. I can't say that I enjoyed the first Godzilla though out of this. If you haven't seen it, watch it. But unfortunately, Godzilla took the back seat in that movie. It was more about the humans themselves, and he was just kind of like on the news in the background for the most part. Maybe the second one was better. I didn't watch it because I was kind of turned off from the first one. But I do like these types of movies. Like Pacific Rim was fun to me. The second one was all right, but I like seeing the big stuff fight. So, yeah, I would like to check it out.
Yeah, I haven't seen the new Godzilla remake, and I really, really want to. I just haven't made time to do it. I could be wrong, so we might have follow-up next week on this, but I'm pretty sure that the latest Godzilla movie was actually a remake of the original Godzilla movie from the 60s, the black and white one. And that movie's actually about like the horrors of the nuclear age, and so that's probably why it was less about Godzilla himself and more about people. I don't know. Just
well, it was kind of funny because like when you've seen the trailers for it, Bryan Cranston was like this big key mark for it, and then when you see the movie, the dude's got like 5 minutes of screen time.
They Sam Jacksoned him.
See, that's why I don't like watching trailers.
Remember, was it Deep Blue Sea? We got eight by the shark. like 2 minutes, then he got eight.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I hate it when they do that and they put, like, all the good bits or all of... or even, like, you watch a trailer and none of that part of the trailer is in the movie.
Yes. Friggin' hate that. That's the worst thing.
But yeah, back to this movie. I did see Skull Island, and that was pretty good. That was a long time ago, though, at this point.
I had interest in watching Skull Island because my dad watched it, and he's like the number one person that's like, that movie's stupid. That movie's stupid. Like, and I'll be like, I love that movie. So when he said he liked Skull Island, I meant to sit down and check that out.
So neither of you have seen Skull Island?
No. Is it good?
Oh, yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, it's not amazing, but it's good, yeah.
Another cool thing about this movie is with HBO Max this year, all of Warner Brothers' movies are going to be streaming for 31 days, like if you have HBO Max. That's kind of their way of getting their new movies out. With COVID and movie theaters being very limited, they're going to be doing... like streaming for 31 days, I think, each movie, something like that. So it'll be cool because it's like, hey, watch it right away. But also, I'll probably go and watch Skull Island. I might check out the Godzilla movies, that kind of thing, because I don't have to worry about like, oh, got to get my ticket. It's just like, hey, I got all this time that I can plan around binging before the movie comes out.
Are they doing party watching?
I don't think they have it yet. No, I think... see, Disney has it. Netflix.
Amazon does.
Amazon. HBO is really focusing on like the quantity of content right now. I think so they're, you know, semi-playing catch-up.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to... find out who they are because they basically destroyed HBO when they came in, and the showrunner for HBO, is he the showrunner or the president, went to Apple TV.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That HBO is like not the HBO studio, and everybody there is not who used to be there. So it's basically Warner Brothers TV show.
Yeah, which, I mean, I've liked most of the stuff they've put out, and even some of the originals. I like the catalog that they have. Like, it's been nice. They have a ton of stuff. It was weird when they kind of brought in Sesame Street from PBS. I got to be honest. I was a little miffed for a while there that, like, you had to pay for it. It's like, it's Sesame Street. Like, what the heck? I know. Whatever. I have kids. It's fine.
Just like a lot of people got mad that... Apple got Peanuts.
Yes.
So now whenever you want to watch the Charlie Brown Christmas Tree every year, you had to go, well, this year you were going to have to go to Apple TV, but because people threw a stink about it, they released it on PBS for like a day, one special day, or maybe a week or something like that.
I think it was like Christmas Eve or something that week. I think they did it.
The streaming wars.
I know, in full force right now, man. Because, you know, just nickel and diming everybody, too. It's like $5 here, $15 there. But the other day, I was like, telling my wife, I was like, can we, like, itemize this and see if we just should buy cable at this point again? Like, because we're getting there again.
Oh, man. Mom, yeah, my mom is paying for, like, AT&T cable streaming and Hulu and Netflix and like everything. And I'm like, this is just so much stuff, but you know, get to watch whatever you want.
Yeah. We got Peacock now because I had to have The Office when it left Netflix. So I did that. Disney, everything.
You know, if you had The Office on DVD, you could put it in your Plex and then you could just watch it all the time.
See, it was funny because the DVD set did go on sale again at Christmas and I was tempted. The problem is I don't have a DVD player at this point.
Yeah, that is kind of funny. We came through a scenario recently where we were like, oh, we could finally watch videos. And we were like, well, hell, we got rid of all of our discs. So now we got to repurchase everything.
That sucks.
Yeah, mine are all in storage. They're in totes.
Yeah. I almost cried getting rid of some of my Alien and Predator discs, but I was like, well, I don't ever touch these things anymore.
Yeah, but speaking of Plex, Ryan, I know that you, there's some news came out from the wonderful people over at Plex around an arcade.
Yeah. I took a diversion this week from work when I saw the announcement that Plex came out with a new service called Plex Arcade. So what it is arcade games that you can play from your Plex server. So currently, well, hold on. Let me start off with what the service is. So if you have Plex, like I do, you can become like a premium subscriber with their Plex Pass service. And you get additional features, which I can't even tell you what they are. But I subscribe to it because I use Plex all the time for all kinds of my movies, my games, everything that's my media catalog. And Plex Arcade is an additional cost to Plex Pass. It is $4.99 a month if you don't have Plex Pass. And if you do have Plex Pass, it's $2.49 a month, I think. And so what it is you can, well, it comes with Atari games out of the box. Atari 2600, 7800, they partnered with Atari, and you can get on your iPhone. I have the little Razer, I can't remember what it is, but the Razer dock that my phone will sit in, and it's a Razer controller that I can use on my phone. And I can,
oh, we need to talk about that, because I've been looking at that.
We'll talk about that. So you can play Atari games on your phone. Awesome. But if that was all that it was, who cares? Well, you can load your own ROMs, and you can play them on your phone.
Okay.
That's very interesting.
Now, I could go on a giant monologue about this service. So why don't you – do you all have any questions?
So it's launching – just covering the basics here. It's launching with Atari games. Have they said, like, this is going to be, you can load any of your own ROMs, or is it limited to, you know, specific vendors? As well, is it going to expand? Like, are they going to go to other software companies and stuff?
So it comes, like I said, it comes baked with Atari ROMs. So you can play, like, a handful of Atari games they have. You can also load your own ROMs for Nintendo games, NES, SNES, Nintendo 64, and Sega games, Genesis, Game Gear, Master System, and then also Game Boy games. I forgot that. So they
just have all these emulators?
So they use LibRetro cores.
Okay, that explains it.
So the process of setting this up is you have to have the latest Plex server. It only runs on Mac OS or Windows. So I have a Linux Plex server. I cannot run it on there right now. The reason for this is because you have to have a Parsec account. Parsec is who Plex has partnered with to do the, I guess, input streaming. Parsec is another company that does...
It's like the cloud gaming type services, right? Like where you can host your own server or whatever they do, kind of.
I didn't look too much into what that company does, but they do like wireless game streaming. So like if you wanted to play a game from your computer on another device, you can set it up.
It's kind of like a VNC at the very like basic level, again simplifying everything to like your computer.
Right. So when you set it up, you have to have the latest server on Mac or Windows, and you have to sign up for a Parsec account and link that account to your Plex account, and then also have the arcade subscription. It is very complicated for me to set up, and I've set up a Plex.
That sounds,
And I've set up a Plex server. Now, this just got announced like 2 days ago, and it's considered Plex Labs, so it's beta. And what they are trying to do is if people subscribe to this, they're going to be able to invest more into it. If they don't, then they'll end up killing it. So I went ahead and signed up because I was like, I want this. This is awesome. But here's the downer. I have not got any other external ROMs to work yet. I had a library of SNES and Genesis ROMs, and I loaded the cores. What I did was they have a FAQ and a getting started guide that I'm going to link to in the show notes for those who want to do this themselves. But what I end up doing is I downloaded RetroArch on my computer, and then you can download the cores that you need in RetroArch. And that was the easiest way for me to basically get the cores onto my computer, and then I copied them into the appropriate folder for Plex.
Okay.
And when I load an SNES game or a Genesis game, I just get a black screen. No error, nothing in the Plex logs, nothing, just a black screen. And they released an update over the last day, and right before the show, I tried to get it working again with that latest update. I couldn't get it going. And there's been some people with similar issues as me in the forums, but I just didn't spend... I've spent a couple hours on this over the last couple days, and I wasn't going to spend that much longer on it. So I'm hoping that they're able to shake out like these weird issues, and that this actually becomes...
Yeah.
You know. What it has the potential to be, because the Atari games work fine.
Right.
I was able to play those, and those were fine. They're Atari games. I played some Centipede and stuff like that, but I want to play Super Mario World.
Yeah. So now I have a RetroPie, so Raspberry Pi with the RetroPie OS installed, and I have the same problem with certain ROMs, right, where they just won't load. They're not compatible with, you know, whatever. However they're doing it on the back end, I'm sure they're using RetroArch or something. But, yeah, it's interesting that when they bill it to be able to play that, though, like it's not there. Or is it literally that there might be like 5 supported games at this point?
No, I don't think it's that the games are not supported, because they explicitly say that these platforms are supported. So when it scans your library, it uses the Internet Game Database to populate the metadata for your games. And just like all other Plex, if you've ever used Plex before, you can name your files a certain way or have a folder structure, and that's how they generate the metadata. But they support the Sega platform and the Nintendo platform, and they explicitly state which consoles that it works on. And I thought the same thing, Ryan. I thought, well, maybe, you know, one of my ROMs is bad. Like, something's not going. And so I launched the game in RetroArch, and it worked fine.
Okay. Yeah.
And if I didn't have the core loaded, which originally I didn't, I would get an error. But now I get, like...
It just doesn't load.
No error. Yeah, you have to manually edit this mapping file to tell it, like, what core goes to what platform. There's a lot of things that they can make better about this process, but it is beta. I just hope that they fix these things, because they've given people like a 7-day free trial, and right now it's been 3 days and I haven't been able to play.
It's so funny, like, the amount of time that you put into some of these things. Like, when I built my own arcade machine and going through rebuilds, hyperspin, all these other things, that you spend all this time trying to get this stuff to work correctly. And it's like, then you finally get it and you play each game for like 10 minutes and you swap to the next one. Like, why did I spend all this time on it? I get so frustrated.
Yep.
Yeah. And so I think that's the potential for me, is that, like, if I had set up a RetroPie or something on my, like, Linux server right here I have in my room, you know, I could sit in front of my TV and play Super Mario World. Well, I can do that on my Switch too. But what is the potential for this is so cool, is like, if you're just sitting somewhere and you're like, oh man, I like to play that, and you just pull out your phone and you can play it on your phone, and you don't have to have everything loaded up. Your save state is shared across all devices because it comes from the server. So if you're like so far into a game, you can just resume it whenever you get back home. And right now, the clients that they support are actually a lot of clients. They support Amazon Fire TV, Android Mobile, Android TV, Apple TV, iOS, macOS, Windows, and the Plex web app on Chromium browsers.
Wow.
Now, yeah, so they support a lot, and I think that those are the clients that Parsec supports, because... Like I said, I haven't been able to test this because I wasn't able to get my own ROMs working, but I think Apple TV and iOS, you can't play them remotely. Like, you have to be on the same local network.
Oh, same Wi-Fi. I gotcha. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a Parsec limitation. And then right now on macOS and Windows, if you use the Plex client app, you cannot pair a game controller. It's keyboard only. So there are some limitations, but I'm hoping... The way that they described it in their announcement was, like, if they can show more interest for this, I think they can drive the feature set that Parsec will develop.
That makes sense. This is like a, let's get some buy-in from the community so we can prove to, like, Parsec, and we can prove to... maybe investors or whatever, that, hey, this is something that our community wants. Let's actually put some money towards it and some developers on it. So, yeah, I could see that.
I'm hoping next week I can come back and say, hey, I got it working. But right now I can only play Atari games, and I'm not that, like, in love with Atari games. I'm not going to pay $250 every month so I can play Centipede on my phone.
Right. I think you are probably on the same page as me with some of this. But the future of gaming, in my opinion, accessibility is everything. And for me, being someone who likes to play in my bed or anywhere in the house, or if I'm out somewhere because I am in a waiting room, whatever, it is really, really nice just to grab whatever the hell it is you enjoy and get right back to that save point. I love that a lot more games are having more cross progression, cross saving, stuff like that. It really makes things super nice, especially if someone being a family person. You don't always get to sit in front of a TV or in front of your computer to play.
Yeah, maybe your kids or your wife is watching the TV, and so you can't use it right now.
Yeah, and that was my saving grace, was the Switch in some of these other games doing the cross saves, like the Immortals Fenyx Rising. Like, okay, whenever I'm done playing my computer, I'll sit on the couch with my wife or whatever, and I'll just play on my Switch, pick up right where I left off. But that, I do have questions real quick on that Razer controller. Do you like that? Because with the xCloud and some of these other streaming services that are out there, I've been more and more wanting to play on my phone.
So I basically got it so that I could play Minecraft on my phone when I have the opportunity to, and it's normally when I'm not around my house, you know, so I can't, and I don't want to bring my Switch because it's large, and when I do play Minecraft, it's very spontaneous. Yeah, so when I have that little Razer controller, you know, I can just pop it around my phone, and it's pretty good. The buttons are great. The thing that I don't love about it is I have the iPhone mini, so it's not as wide as the other phones. And when I put it on there, it doesn't feel secure. It is secure because it's held in with the Lightning port, and then the other side of the phone goes around the top, which it would now be the left side because you have your phone sideways. So it's pretty secure in there, but like if I wanted to, I could just like flip my wrist backwards and just easily pop that left side of the controller out. So I don't really, that's the only part that I just don't like. It just kind of has a little bit of a wiggle that makes it not feel very secure. But for just a quick, like, quick spontaneous Minecraft game, or, you know, hopefully playing Super Mario World on Plex Arcade, it would be pretty perfect.
Yeah, so it's the Razer Kishi Mobile game controller, and they have an Xbox for Android, stuff like that style. And I was more curious of, because I've been playing around with it with my Xbox controller, like Gears of War, Halo, stuff like that, with the xCloud. And I see this, and I'm like, this would be so much more comfortable than having the stand for your phone on a controller.
Yeah, I think the Xbox controllers definitely are going to have a better feel.
Right, but the weight.
Right. Yeah, wait. What really sold it for me on the Kishi was, instead of having to worry about, even if I had like the little clip to clip my phone to the Xbox controller, I have to make sure my Xbox controller's charged up. And I don't always play with my Xbox controller, so it's not charged up most of the time. The Kishi runs off of the power of your device, so it doesn't have a battery. So whenever you want to play, just pop it on. And you don't ever have to worry about it, so it's always ready to go.
And that's where I had some questions at one point, because I don't have AirPods. I don't have any real earbuds that are Bluetooth, and obviously there's no way to put a headphone jack on the side of this and do a passive set. So essentially you have to rely on Bluetooth in order to have audio.
Hold on, I'll be right back. I'm going to get the Kishi and take a look at it.
Kishi, what a name.
Mishi, gotta get my Kishi.
What a name. It looks cool. I've never seen this before.
Yeah. I'm not sure if you would just have to pair your Bluetooth headset. I'd have to look at the manual, but it does have a pass-through for USB-C. Or is this Lightning? I think it's Lightning on this one. It has a pass-through so you can charge your phone while you're playing. I'm not sure if it's data pass through. So like if you had an adapt, like if you, for Apple things, you have you can get a Lightning to like 3.5 millimeter audio. You might be able to plug that in here and actually use that as wired headphones.
Yeah. But that would just be like another peripheral you have to carry around with you and stuff, right? That's where I know ultimately if I want this to be very beneficial for me, I just need to find something that's nice, that's Bluetooth, that I can get behind and enjoy.
Yeah, but I would probably recommend the Kishi to like somebody else, maybe you, Adam, if, you know, with the only caveat being that it doesn't feel like the most secure device, at least with my phone. If I had like the iPhone Pro Max, it would probably feel like rock solid because it's so like wide, but since I have the mini, it fits smaller in the recess that the Kishi has for the phone. But the buttons feel good. I mean, I think the Android version's like $79. the iOS version was like $100. I wish that it was $79 because I don't really feel like it's worth $100. A $60 Xbox controller has a lot better feel than this, but it's still pretty good. So the convenience features that sold it for me.
Well, that's good to know. And I'm hoping that in the xCloud eventually, like, because Microsoft has been doing with their Game Pass where they've started including EA. And I believe that they're going to start eventually putting the Ubisoft Connect Plus. So all those games, too, I think are eventually going to be there. Could be wrong on the Ubisoft part, but EA is already there. It'd be cool to see all those being that stream service. And then it's just even more reason to have the Kishi, so you can just pop it on your phone and pick it up for accessibility.
Yeah, like I just docked my phone into it and just to get a better feel for it. If you play with the, if you don't move your arms around a bunch while you play, you'll probably be good. Like if you keep them still, but if you're like one of those people that's playing like Mario and you're like, oh, I gotta get onto the platform, and you're like jerking your whole body sideways, you might have an incident, but it's not going to come out because it's attached via the power plug, but one side of your controller might pop off or something like that.
All right. Yeah. You might have to bring that over sometime. Let me check it out.
Yeah. So I think that's it for this week. Thanks for listening. Go to diversion.fm to subscribe and listen weekly in your podcast player of choice. If you like the show, share it with a friend. Thanks again and see you next week. Say goodbye, everybody.
We'll see you guys next week.
See y'all around. Later.